Support for Radio Boston comes from Hadestown at the Box Center Wang Theater, Broadway's Tony and Grammy-winning Best Musical, an epic celebration of music, togetherness, and hope, raves Forbes. Playing April 23rd through April 28th. Buy your tickets today at boxcenter.org.
Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We're going to spend some time now talking with Dr. Pam Ettinger. In 2013, she became president of Bunker Hill Community College, Massachusetts' largest community college. And she's been a visionary leader in higher education for quite some time. Earlier this month, she was honored at the White House as a champion of change for her work expanding college access to underrepresented groups and non-traditional students. Ettinger is now on a mission to fight hunger on college campuses. She and two other community college presidents have urged Senator Elizabeth Warren to push the federal government to study the issue. And Dr. Ettinger joins us now in the studio. Welcome to Radio Boston.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
So, I mean, I definitely want to spend some time talking about you and your background. But before that, I mean, let's just get straight to this issue of campus hunger. How prevalent is it on college campuses these days?
I think it has been there for a long, long time, and we've just begun to look. And as we delve deeper into the issue, we realize that it's endemic, probably in the community college sphere, but it's also in colleges that you would not normally associate with poverty and great need. Certainly, you know, in my own alma mater, and this is a while ago, I was there at Barnard. I read a story that students at Barnard are experiencing the same issues with food insecurity as the students on my campus. I have 14,000 students a semester, 19,000 a year. And out of the 14,000 students, 8,000 of them are on financial aid. And out of that 8,000, about 1,000 students are on food stamps.
Wow.
They're on SNAP, and you know that those 1,000 students, by the end of their third week and the beginning of the fourth week in their food stamp cycle, they're going to run out of food. And it is hard for me to imagine that you're taking care of a family, you're running out of food, and yet you're trying to take four or five classes and trying to manage. So from where we sit at the community college, at least for me, my end goal is to get students to stay at college and to complete.
Yeah. Well, in 2012, Bunker Hill actually opened its first food bank.
Yes.
On campus.
Yes. We were very fortunate to have the support of the Greater Boston Food Bank. And what they do is they bring food onto campus, and we hold what we call a mobile food pantry. And we give away a ton of food, literally a ton of food a month. So the folks will come with family, and students will, you know, take staples like beans and rice and canned goods and so on, and it fills a need. Yeah. It disappears, literally disappears, in the food disappears in an hour.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's a disturbing thing to think that that students who have worked so hard to get where they are may be up against a choice that no one wants to have to make, because, you know, do they continue to, as you said, work and go to school and take care of their kids? And when they can't balance them both because there's just not enough money to put food on the table, I mean, how are students navigating this choice? Do they end up having to drop out or take time away from school?
Well, I think when we think about balance, a lot of times folks with means, with adequate food supply and adequate housing, we think about balancing as giving up, for the moment, one thing or the other. But for these students, once they drop out, let's say they must work 40 hours a week, and most of our students work, and a lot of them work full-time. It's a choice between, well, should I take another two classes so I can finish this semester? Or should I work so that I can put food on the table? Mm. It's a choice that's made every day. And once a student leaves the college, the likelihood of them coming back becomes so much more difficult, right? The stairs get steeper every time you leave.
Yeah.
So the goal, what's in our minds at the college, is that poverty is temporary, right? Once the student gets through those four semesters, their wages go up, they have greater opportunity, and maybe they can break that cycle of poverty. So for me, my goals are relatively short term. I need to get them through school. But the need is so great. We calculated a while back that to take care of all of the students who are food insecure at the campus is an 800,000 $800,000 a year proposition.
$800,000 a year.
$800,000 to get one solid meal a day to those students.
Just one meal a day.
One solid meal. Yes. And, you know, it is when you look at the scale of things, though, $800,000 is not such a huge number to get those thousand students through their college education. Mm-hmm. It's a small amount of money.
Mm-hmm.
But then it's not small when you have nothing, right? So I was laughing today with a colleague, Sarah Galdra-Grapp, one of the scholars who's written a book on poverty in higher education, runs the Wisconsin Hope Lab. And we were the recipient of a $5,000 grant from her to just do work or to supplement. And I get a call from, an email from one of my counselors that there are now 2,000 Clif Bars sitting in his office. And he was rejoicing that there's boxes and boxes of just cereal bars in his office. And that will get 2,000 students through a day. So that's the kind of scale and sometimes desperation that we work with. In order not to lose hope and not to be depressed all the time, I look at the flip side, right? If someone is willing to step foot across that campus and brave hunger and the stigma of being hungry and eating that Clif Bar will get them through that class, that's a huge amount of resilience and that's a huge amount of hope.
Yeah.
There's a future in this.
Yeah, well, without a doubt. Absolutely without a doubt. But I have to... I'm really curious. I mean, what do you think is driving the increased or the increasing need? We know things are getting progressively more and more expensive, and many students have to take more and more loans, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, are we just sort of on this trajectory towards costs just outcompeting students' ability to pay, and so they just have to make choices about where the money's going to go?
I think, yes, things are getting more expensive, and when we talk about debt is going up, even though we keep it to a minimum at the community college. But I think that need has always been there.
Mm-hmm.
Because community colleges now are getting a second look, and it's getting more notoriety, and it's becoming an avenue of hope, more students are trying, and therefore you're having students who in the past would have said, there's no way I can make it to college. It's not possible. We're saying to them, no, you have talent. You can do it. And therefore, their struggle is becoming more apparent. I would like to see it as both an increase of need, but also an increase of hope. Access, when we think about access, a lot of times we think about just tuition and fees. But access is really about tuition and fees and food, a home. You know, homelessness, food insecurity, and really what I call a restoration of privilege for these students who are underserved. College didn't used to be in their sight, now it is. They have to work harder for it, and therefore they may forego food, they may forego rent, but the payoff is big.
Yeah. You know, I have to say, the Boston area brings certain issues about American life into such incredibly sharp relief.
Pinpoint.
Right? Because
yes.
We are both home to students who are able to go to some of the world's wealthiest universities. Not to say that those schools don't have challenges, but then we're also, you know, we're hearing stories about, from you, about how $800,000 could feed students who have food insecurity on the campus of Bunker Hill for an entire year. I mean, you've been in higher ed for a long time. I'm asking you frankly, do you ever get frustrated about how the broader inequities of American society play out on campuses, on your campus?
Of course I do. I mean, that's what drives me, right? When I began my college career in America, I didn't know any of this. I came from an immigrant family that's not well-to-do. You know, we're lower middle class. My dad was a waiter all his life. My mom did factory work, except she took it home so she can be with the kids. And the push for my parents was for me to go to a good college. So I got into one of the Seven Sisters, and then I went to Columbia. It was not okay for me at that point, even if I were hungry and my parents were pushing their resources to get me there, for me to say I'm hungry, because hunger is associated with shame in America. Somehow there is a moral inadequacy that you have if you are hungry. or if you let folks know. And therefore, if you went to an elite university, you just don't say. So I'm not so sure if it's something that's not always already been there.
Right.
And that we're just not, you know, moving along.
There does seem to be, I mean, in part because of efforts like people like you, a growing awareness, right? Because there was this Twitter hashtag that BU students put out not that long ago, hashtag poor at a private university. And they were telling the stories of their challenges living in poverty and going to an expensive private school as well. Now, we mentioned at the beginning of when I first introduced you that you and two other community college presidents have urged Senator Warren to push for a federal study on the issue of campus hunger. Have you heard back from Senator Warren?
We have been working with Senator Warren's staff, and I believe she is, they are working on securing a bipartisan proposal so that it can actually get through much quicker. We have a great deal of hope that this is, you know, hunger is a bipartisan issue. So hopefully it won't get caught in all of the sound and fury that's been going on lately.
Yeah. And then food insecurity doesn't care what party you belong to.
No, they really don't care. And frankly, you know, we have such a good program in our secondary schools and our elementary schools. You don't just all of a sudden graduate from high school and not be hungry anymore. Right? So if we want to have the kind of universal higher education for our citizens, then we have to make the allowances that it will take the resources to get them there.
Yeah. And we've got a couple minutes here left to go. Do you mind if I just ask you a couple of questions about your own journey? Because you're such a remarkable person. I read a quote where you were telling the story, as you just mentioned that you were 11 years old when you came to the United States from Hong Kong.
From Hong Kong.
Yeah. And this was in Diverse Issues in Higher Education, this quote. You said, "My English was not great, and I was a little immigrant girl in Miami. If someone had not seen the potential, I'd be making widgets somewhere."
Yep.
Who was that someone who saw potential?
Actually, it were two people. My sixth grade English teacher, Mrs. Shands. I mean, she knew that I was going to go from learning vocabulary to honors in a year, and she pushed me there. And the other is a gentleman who was
in a year.
Immersion is a wonderful thing. And my high school advanced placement English teacher, who was also my yearbook advisor, he pushed me to apply to Columbia, during a very cold New York City college trip, you know, I decided that I would apply, and those are the two pushes. And what makes me sad is that the students that we have now are almost random in receiving their advising. So they may be making widgets if they don't run into the same two people like the ones that I have.
Yeah. When you say random in receiving their advising, is that in terms of before they get to Bunker Hill?
Yeah, okay. A lot of times. So, you know, we're trying to work with, let's say, the Boston Public Schools to make sure, and the Boston Foundation, to make sure that every Boston Public School graduate coming to a community college will have a success coach or transition coach. Advising is almost as important as the academics, because our students don't talk about college around their dinner table. Those privileges are taken from them, or they have not access to it. So the college conversation, the conversations about the future, the conversations about planning and aspirations, we have to restore that conversation to them. Mm-hmm. And that was what was done to me when I came to the country, and it was great.
Well, so tell me more about that. Tell me more about growing up in Miami. It's remarkable for me to hear that you went from learning English vocabulary. I mean, look, talking to you now, I have to say I'm not surprised, because clearly you have a great deal of intelligence and drive. But I mean,
I'm also old now. So,
but like, what was it? Those two teachers. Did you have other support? I mean, how did you do that?
I think a lot of it is expectations, even though, well, my parents were educated, my father through high school, my mom through at least middle school, but they knew that they gave up everything they had in Hong Kong to come to America so they can have education for their children. So they didn't know Columbia, they didn't know colleges, but they knew that I was going to go. So I started out as a biology pre-med journalism major and ended up an English major. They don't know what that meant. And the first time my father visited me at my college and I was the college president, he couldn't quite figure out what I do all day. So, you know, I was a doctor who didn't help people. You know? It was, but I think those kinds of expectations, those kinds of conversations, even though they were general, were helpful. And back then, in the late 70s, community colleges are not what they are now. Were not, you know, they were not common. So they didn't get to go to school. They didn't get to continue their education, and they were only in their early 30s. Mm-hmm. So to think about the way that the way that our country has progressed over the last 30, 40 years has been really amazing, as much as through, you know, backward steps every now and then, and poverty and hunger and all of this stuff. We have moved towards greater democracy, I think, in our higher education area.
Well, we've just got about 30 seconds left here to go, but you must see, I'm guessing that you must see shades of your journey reflected in many of the students at Bunker Hill. Do you? I mean, in terms of the transitions they have to make.
They are me. I see them every day. I see my face every day across those hallways, and I have such hope. It must be easier for them. It has to be easier for them than it was for me.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Well, Dr. Ettinger, I have to say, I feel like we've only begun our conversation. Will you come back again?
Absolutely. Anything that I can do to sell community college to you, I will.
Well, we have to talk about tuition and Boston Public School students. There's so much. And so we'll have you back. We'll have you back soon. Dr. Pam Ettinger is president of Bunker Hill Community College. She talked with us today about the growing awareness of hunger and food insecurity on college campuses. We'll have more information about all of that at our website, radioboston.org. True honor to speak with you, Dr. Ettinger. Thank you so very much.
Thank you.
We'll be back. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.